It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 20th of November. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them at Ocean View Road, Oniroa. On Saturday the 20th of November 2010, Matthew Tetley-Jones talked to retiring librarian Rosalie Hennigan and Bill Kinghorn from Waiheke Living Without Violence.
We're talking to Rosalie from the library. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. Good morning, Matthew, and good morning, wonderful Waihekeans. And isn't this sea mist or something doing wonderful things for our garden? It's just coating the plants with a little drip of water and they're saying, woohoo, yeah. First shower I've had for weeks.
Popping their little heads up and, yes. Leaves unfurling and buds unbudding.
Yes, so I actually want it to rain so I don't have to water my garden, but I think that's a whole lot of other people on Waiheke. Enough said, fancy me wanting rain after moaning about it for so many months.
You know what Mark Twain said about the weather? He said, everyone's talking about it, why doesn't somebody do something about it?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind.
Okay,
that's
then.
A good saying. The Charming Quirks of Others. Now, that's one in the series of Isabel Dalhousie Edinburgh books. And that's the latest one that I've read. Now, it's written by a chap called Alexander McCall Smith. And I'm sure everybody's leaping up and down saying, oh, of course. The number one ladies' detective agency.
Yes,
did you read that series?
Yeah, I did. They're quite engaging.
Very. Yeah. I love his habit of just looking at the small, everyday things and picking that out for the characters. And, it's so real. And I think that's what I like about him. After the success of Precious McKenzie and the number one ladies detective agency, I actually caught up with some of his earlier ones. Some of his African folk tales were very good. I wasn't so keen on his German ones, but then I've met somebody else who absolutely adored them, so thank
no
God we're all different.
Yep.
Yes. And I like his London series too. And of course, they started in much the same way. He was asked to write a column. Because for those who don't know, Alexander McCall Smith is a very highly rated surgeon and medical practitioner in Edinburgh.
I'm astounded.
I think he's a professor or some level like that. He really is up there.
I'm astounded. So writing is not his day job?
No, but he loved writing and he loves playing a musical instrument. His orchestra is infamous rather than famous, and he's the first one to enjoy that joke. And so he started writing a column in the newspaper, and then it went on and on and on, and gradually people said, why don't you put that into a book? After all, it's the way Charles Dickens started with a lot of his Pickwick Papers and so on. So that was actually the background for the Isabel Dalhousie ones. She's a woman of independent means, but she's also means very well. She's a philosopher and she edits a journal of philosophy, which actually she ends up buying, but I'm giving away secrets telling you that.
And now, is this contemporary or is this...
Yes, it is, very, very much so.
Because Edinburgh was somewhat of a hotbed of philosophy back in the 1800s, in the 1700s.
Yes, I think Scotland always has excellence in erudition. How about that?
Yep.
I'm a great admirer. Like the Irish. I think it's the Gaelic thing.
Right.
How about that? Have you got any Gaelic in you?
Oh, hell yeah. Yep.
Okay, I'm safe saying that. But however, I do think Alexander McCall Smith, he doesn't write about great spy stories or things like that. It's his gift for character and his perspicacity, which I think sums up his characters. And there's a little bit I was reading on a sort of a type of blog, and he said this in an interview that... talking about the one that he set in London, which I really enjoy, that's the Corduroy Mansion series, about an older man, late middle age, whose son is still living at home, and the late middle aged man has a girlfriend who wants to get rid of the son, and so she knows that the son hates dogs, so she decides she'll get a dog. It's really funny.
I can see the drama in that situation, yes.
Yes. So, but he writes about it. This is a light social comedy, I suppose. But while I admit that the whole point of the exercise is for the reader to have fun, isn't that lovely?
Yes, indeed.
Doesn't want to be educational or anything. He just wants the reader to have fun. I hope in this story, nevertheless, to say something about how we live and about how finding love and meaning in the very small things of life may transform us, may make our ordinary lives more bearable.
Well, there you go. A little bit of magic just in the escapism there.
It's not, isn't it? Yep. Yes, yes. So that's the guy I'm putting before you today. Alexander McCall Smith, because he is so prolific and he's just an incredible man.
And the book especially that has just come out?
Well, The Charming Quirks of Others is the seventh in the Isabel Dalhousie series. The one just before that was The Lost Art of Gratitude. I mean, even the titles tell you quite a lot about them.
Yeah.
They're very gentle reads, but as I say, there's this very dry wit.
Yeah.
And the characters are just
And not hard work.
Not hard work, definitely not hard work. No, if you're wanting a change from Wolf Hall, which I absolutely loved, by the way, you know, these are just great.
Oh, good, eh?
Right.
And a bit of a Rosalie retrospective today. We're just going to go back and talk about a few specific things for you.
Yep. I was told to prepare some things about my life because I'm retiring from the library.
Yes.
And so you're invited to a cup of tea at Friday between 10 and 12. And yes, it'll be my official farewell, but I'll still be around the place.
Right.
And probably popping into the library occasionally, I should imagine.
Other side of the counter, eh?
Yes. After so many years, the great thing from my perspective has been seeing mums bring in their children, you know, and they're 2 and 3 and 4 and et cetera.
Yep.
And then they grow up and they become like this year's head girl and top of the school and these sort of people. These are kids that I know from years of reading and perhaps suggesting different books, or they've been able to tell me different books later on. And then those kids grow up, get married and bring or have a partner. Excuse me. And then they bring their children back and their children come to story time. So it's sort of a wonderful progression. And I've seen that. I've been so lucky.
Yep.
And before that, I came to Waiheke from Christchurch.
Oh, yeah.
If I go right back to when I was born in Fielding, many, many years ago.
Ah, Fielding, yes.
Yes, the most beautiful town, it's been voted. It is a pretty town too.
But you can win bets by getting people to spell it, because they spell it wrong. They spell
Indeed.
It like the field, don't they?
Yes, yes, of course they do. And it was named after Colonel Fielding in the Manchester block way back in the early pioneering days. And that's how we came there, going back to the pioneers. My ancestors, my grandfather, he was an Irishman who left Ireland when he was age 17.
Right.
And with another friend from the village, and they actually walked to the boat.
Right.
Because that was all you had in those days.
Yep.
Caught a boat, and I don't know if he intended to come here, but he probably did because he had cousins here.
I see.
One was one of the first lighthouse keepers in Stevens Island.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Top of the South Island.
The Tuatara man.
Yes.
And he pointed them out to German professor.
Well, it was Hochstetter or something like that.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, oh, there
and,
we go. Well, there's
so
a tale.
So I mean, there's so many interesting things, you know, sort of. But however, to get back to my grandfather, so he worked on the railways because if they worked on the railways for a certain length of time, you were given a right for a ballot.
Right.
So that's what he did. And he walked from Wellington to Whanganui.
Yep.
And he had a bit of a delay at, begins with W out of Waikanae.
Oh, yeah.
And he wasn't expecting that because normally you can ford that river quite easily, just walk straight across it. But he had to camp there because that night of all nights there was a great flood. So he was a wee bit delayed, but however, he had made up time and walked up to Whanganui, took part in the ballot, and that's how he got our farmland.
I don't know if everybody would know the that system, because it was about settling. The idea was to settle people on the land.
1870s, yes.
So it was
yes.
almost like a lottery. If you went in the ballot, they'd actually draw you out, and you'd get a farm at a bit of crown land. And the thing about it, I guess, is it wasn't a big prize, because of course your job then was to break it in.
Yes. So it was all treed.
Yeah.
So of course my grandfather had to do a tremendous job, and typically they picked the only bit of flat land. They weren't thinking about views,
right?
And so, you know, developed that and then stretched it out further and further.
So
he must have been an amazing man. And then he met his wife, who owned a tea shop in Fielding. Now that was very early on, in the 1900s.
Yeah.
And she had come out in 1892, again a romantic story, because from Ireland,
yeah.
And her sister had met Jamie Lynch. Now Jamie Lynch was quite gorgeous, apparently, and Annie, Rose's sister.
This is your grandmother.
This is my grandmother. Yep. Yes. Amy wasn't allowed to come all the way out to New Zealand on her own. Her mother thought and father thought, oh, can't have that, you know, respectable farmer's daughter. So Rose said, well, I'll go with her. So Rose came out when she was very, very young. And in those days, people would get off the boat and hire themselves out as servants.
Yes.
So that's what happened.
Right.
Amy met her Jamie and got married.
Yeah.
Rose went off to Teshmaker's and became a servant. And Mr. Teshmaker, for people who don't know, South Islanders will know the name immediately. They had a big farm down.
It was a school for a while, wasn't it?
That's right. In Oamaru, and
right.
he became extremely successful. Built a beautiful house.
A grand house,
and that became sold for a Dominican convent and college.
Yeah.
It was a great institution. Some of my friends actually went there.
Yep.
And my daughter was actually going to be there as a boarder, but then I changed my mind about the boarding, and they changed their minds about being in an elite school and going out and serving the community in a more less obvious way, shall we say. So that's
where your grandmother took her
cooking, yes. And then she ended up in, I think it was number one Tinakori Road, which in those days was, I believe, a very important either member of the Crown, which it still is, or the Guthries from Guthrie Station had the property next door. So she
just
ended
down
up
the road from Catherine Mansfield or something.
Yes,
wouldn't it,
yes, yeah. yes, indeed.
Except
and
she was
very, very good, apparently, as a cook.
Yep.
And then Annie's husband, in the meantime, got killed in a river. He drowned.
No, fording the river, yeah.
Yes, because rivers were called widow makers in those days.
Yep.
So that was very tragic. So Annie and Rose got together, came to Fielding, this new little town, and said, it needs a tea shop. Maybe we could make our living doing that and being our own bosses. So they did.
Right.
So we were very entrepreneurial. And then, of course, Patrick came to Fielding, bought the farm, and met Rose. And so the two of them hightailed it off to Wellington to get married, and came back and lived on the farm. And
of course, father was back in Ireland, so she didn't have to ask anybody.
No. So, and I think by that time they were old enough too, and wise enough. So they had several children, and my father was the eldest.
Right.
And I've got a beautiful photo of him all dressed up in starched white with lace and ringlets and all the rest of it. He looks a beautiful picture of a little girl.
Right.
But I think in those days they did that sort of thing, you know. Mm.
Yes, well, no,
when they were babies, they were definitely babies, and it didn't matter what sex, you know, sort of. So all these beautiful hand-stitched, and we've still got the christening gown, which she made, and of course which we were all baptised into, and the next generation. So it's getting a few holes in it now, so we cover it up with a little pink or blue ribbon in discreet places for the holes.
Crikey. So anyway, the family's established in Fielding.
In Fielding, yes. My brother's still there. He sold the farm when his wife became ill, and she later died of cancer. Terrible thing, that cancer. And so I went to teacher's college, became a teacher. I wasn't a very good teacher. Then I went into radio and became a radio announcer. From there, I did a lot of interviews for the national program and for this local station. I went down to 4ZB and worked there for a while.
Was this in the 60s?
Yes, that's right. I'm really showing my age now. I was a shopping reporter and an afternoon personality.
Crikey.
Wasn't allowed to have any personality any other time of the day.
Did you ever meet Ralda Familton?
Yes. As a matter of fact, Ralda was at boarding school with me.
Good Lord.
And we were both the pets of Sister Imelda, who was a very good person to have the pets, because Sister Melly had her favourites and we were speech and drama people,
right.
Ralda and I,
yep.
Unsurprisingly. And each year, Sister Melly would pick out somebody who she thought was worth encouraging, and so I was one of the ones she encouraged. I have great respect for her. Wonderful teacher, 4 foot of absolute dynamism, and terrific drama teacher, and she'd get you on stage and she'd show you what to do, and you'd think, how does she do that? She becomes 6 foot, you know, sort of. She was just tremendous. So Ralda, yes, and I both ended up on radio.
Working for the national program of the NZBC in the, like,
Yes. Well, I was strictly commercial, but right. I did do a lot of documentaries on which were put on the national program.
Did you have much involvement in music?
Not really.
Well, just about playing and choosing music.
No, because you had your own program department who would do that, and that wasn't my forte.
Right.
But talking music, we have got, when I was growing up, my father was one of the people, and his brothers were one of the people, very involved with Hata Peora. In fact, it was through them that it became a farm for the and school for the Maorist boys, for the Maori Boys College.
Yeah.
My aunt was a Maorist nun in Fiji, so that's the connection there.
Not your mother, but your aunt.
Yeah. my mother's got a story which I can go on with too.
But anyway.
But never mind. So, however, I thought to start off, we'd have one of my favourite Maori songs, which is Poie.
Well, I'll just tell you, because now we're in the 21st century and we don't have gramophones anymore. So, so Rosalie's brought along this CD, and I'm just going to ask you to press that button that says play there, and we'll have a listen. What's the song?
Poie.
Right. Okay, then.
E poi karua taku poi ka tua ki ari ni ka pare paru a taku poi e
Kori kori e, tiki whakaru marawati
Waiheke Radio, this is Island Life, and we're talking to Rosalie this morning, retiring from the library and looking back on a career that spans all sorts of things, starting off in fielding and moving through to working on the radio in the 60s. And that was a song called Poie, from a compilation called Favourite Māori Songs by Te Kohanga. That was quite a good one, really, Rosalie.
Yeah, I've always been a great fan for that one. And at the time when it was there, I was going through a broke period. Financially, my life has been a series like jumping on a trampoline. Sometimes it's up and sometimes it's down, but we all know that.
Yep.
So that's a great song. Other music I like was sort of guitar, and, of course, that's how I came across Andrew Sigal. And I bought the CD quite a long time ago, and I actually, you see, this is the difference. That was, you can barely see the words, but it's $31.95, so I must have been having a good time then.
Ah, right.
Some of my good times were because I was...
Living high on the hog, eh?
Yes. I started writing because my elderly aunt got Alzheimer's. Well, it wasn't actually Alzheimer's, it was more or less series of
apparently
little strokes.
There's 100 different types of dementia.
Yes, and so that was quite tragic, so I wanted to be at home with her and look after her, and my daughter was going to school next door, and I had to have an income, so I started writing again because I'd done a lot of writing for radio, and one of the people I'd met was Essie Summers, and she was the doyen of New Zealand romance writing for Mills and Boone, so I'd talked to her about it, and she said, yes, I think you could write because you've done so much. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. So I did, and I was successful. So I must have had some fresh royalties when I bought this one.
And while your thoughts were on romance, you turned to the...
Segovia collection.
Yes.
And we'll just play a small piece of Allegretto Vivo.
And this is Andre Segovia. Well, let's see if that one will go. Try pressing it again. There we go.
No, I don't press hard enough. Okay.
That's Andre Segovia there, and we're talking to Rosalie from the library, doing a bit of a retrospective about her career in books. You've written a few.
Yes. I was very, very fortunate. Mills and Boone and Harlequin Romance published 13. I actually wrote 14, but that last one is still waiting. It's been waiting for many years. In fact, I've got it back
home. It was too spicy for the times, was it?
No, I don't think it was probably spicy enough.
Oh.
Because, you see, I belong to a slightly older generation, and I think today sex is much more out there and much more as it should be. It's a great part of life. And I tended to write a more romantic sort of novel. So
maybe you should be writing Hindi films. You know,
that's when the
hero and the heroine kiss, and then it's up to the sky. And
yes, exactly. Yes, well, that's how it used to be. I mean, 30 years ago, some of your listeners may remember back that far, but you know, sort of, it's a wonder we ever got from past the first kiss, because I mean, the bedroom door closed then; we didn't see anything.
Mm.
Yeah, but however, we have learned.
Mm. Yep, well, all those Swedish films, eh?
Yeah. So, but talking babies and sex, I have a daughter who is the delight of my life, and her name's Joanna, and she is married, and she lives in Seattle. And
West Coast of America there.
Yes, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place, Washington State. There's the Olympic Peninsula. It's all mountains and huge Washingtonia trees and Douglas firs.
I think Mount St. Helens isn't going to go off again, is it?
I hope not. You can't really see that from my daughter's place. You see Mount Rainier, which is a beautiful mountain, a bit like Taranaki.
Yep.
Very conical and just gorgeous, with huge woodlands around it. And then there's also, just up the coast, the Cascade Mountains, which are just beautiful,
oh, yes.
And Mount Baker, of course. So it's absolutely glorious. I can recommend it to anyone. And somebody once said to me, I think it was Greg Deans, that one of the most beautiful ferry trips in the world is from Seattle up to Victoria Island, just by Vancouver. And so my daughter and I did that trip, and that was a great trip. The Bouchard Gardens was something that I'd heard of years ago and really wanted to see. So if anybody wants to know what to go and see, the Bouchard Gardens, and just down the road, which is not very well known, is the most beautiful butterfly house. I've never seen one like it. It's absolutely huge, and it's just those beautiful blue Amazon butterflies.
Yep.
They flit around, and you'll get great big atlas moths, which are the biggest moths in the world. You'll see them there. Heck. I saw the great big caterpillars, and I thought, oh my God, you know, sort of, and that is just so big. And it's just a beautiful, it's such a big butterfly house that they have flamingos inside.
Crikey.
And vanilla beans, but I noticed they'd been carefully picked off or otherwise split and the contents taken out.
Well, it's quite valuable, the vanilla, isn't it?
Yes, that's yes. But
essence. You get a little bottle of it.
It's just a beautiful butterfly house. So
that's, is this in Vancouver?
That's in Victoria, which is the island just opposite Vancouver.
Right.
Then back down the coast is just all these wonderful islands. And my daughter actually lives on an island, Mercer Island, in the middle of Lake Washington. So
right.
She's actually about 15 minutes from the CBD. And when I go over there, I'm going to be there for Christmas. So I'm hoping for a white Christmas, although the Seattleans probably aren't.
Right.
Because they're not used to snow. They had a lot of it 2 years ago. And as the boys said, trampolines munted.
Yeah.
Yes, the weight of the snow.
Snow seems huge. It's great stuff in the postcards, but when you have to drive to work or walk to work in snow, you sort of gets a bit old quickly,
yes.
You know.
My daughter has tracks that she puts on her boots.
How about
that? Because the hills, like you park your car and then you walk across to your building.
Right.
And it's only a little way, but you can't risk, because the snow turns to ice. So everybody has these tracks on their boots. And I thought, whoa, you know, that's
Crikey.
Going to be a new experience.
So you put chains on the tyres and tracks on your boots.
Exactly.
Crikey.
Well, the people who are used to the mountains do, but
yep.
Other people just
fall over and bust their ass.
Yes, yes,
yes.
So that's why most Seattleans, they don't have a problem with snow. So when it comes, they're really not used to it, so they prepared last year and they didn't get any.
So
I don't know, or very little, didn't stay. So I'm not sure what will happen this year.
Well,
but it'll be—it's always cold. It's about 8 degrees below at times.
So whoever it is that does something about the weather will order up some bit of snow there around
just Christmas
24th, yes. 25th sort of, so it
that'd
settles
be great.
In there.
Yep. Yes.
Have you got grandkids there?
Yes, I have. A little boy called Patrick. He's 2¾.
Yep.
And he is just beautiful.
Oh,
he
that's
is
nice.
Just gorgeous.
So you'll be looking forward to seeing him.
I am. They came out last New Year.
Yep.
And my daughter has 3 stepsons as well.
Right.
And so she has a fairly busy life.
Yep.
And her husband is a Kiwi. He's a senior scientist and one of these clever guys who deals with genes and things like that. And working very hard.
He doesn't work in a clothes shop.
No,
that's jeans with a G.
Oh. Jeans with a G, yes.
Oh, I see.
I didn't even think of that. Go on.
If there's a cheap pun, I'm looking for it.
Yeah,
and
fair
I
enough,
found
Matthew.
It that time.
Yes, well done.
Any other things you're looking forward to when you're true?
Yes, I'm going to see Nutcracker, the ballet, for Christmas. It's part of my Christmas present.
And a bit of Tchaikovsky there, is it?
Yes, and the other big favourite of mine, I'm a fairly new latecomer to opera. My favourite is the Magic Flute. And I was lucky enough to see it in Auckland, and I have seen it overseas as well. And I've seen 2 film versions, so that's some of my favourite music. I love the fact that Mozart had this dear friend who was a bass singer. And usually it's the tenor that gets the main roles. But in the Magic Flute, it's Papageno that has this great role, and he really carries the whole show. So I'm not seeing that, but I'm seeing The Barber of Seville. But I'd like to play just a couple of minutes of Papageno's song.
All right, so this is from The Magic Flute. Yep, that's just about it.
Yes.
All right, press it again. It started and then you stopped it again.
Papagina, Papagina, Weichen, Teuchen, meine Schöne, vergebens. Ach, sie ist verloren, ich bin zum Unglück schon geboren. Ich plauderte, plauderte, und das war schlecht. Und drum geschieht es mir schon recht, drum geschieht es mir schon recht. Seit ich gekostet diesen Wein, seit ich das schöne Weibchen sah, so brennt's im Herzenskämmerlein, so zwickt es hier, so zwickt es da. Papagina, Herzensweibchen, Papagina, liebes Teufchen. Es ist umsonst, es ist vergebens, müde bin ich meines Lebens, sterben macht der Liebe ein End. Wenn sie im Herzen doch so brennt. Diesen Baum, da will ich zieren, mir an ihm den Hals zu schnüren, weil das Leben mir missfällt. Gute Nacht, du falsche Welt, weil du böse an mir handelst, mir kein schönes Kind zu wandelst. So ist aus, so sterbe ich. Schöne Mädchen, denkt an mich. Schöne Mädchen, denkt an mich. Will sich eine um mich armen, ich hänge noch erbarmen. Nun so lass ich's diesmal sein. Rufet nur, ja oder nein. Rufet nur, ja oder nein. Keine hört mich, alles stille, alles, alles stille, also ist es euer Wille. Papagino, frisch hinauf, ende deinen Lebenslauf. Papagino, frisch hinauf, ende deinen Lebenslauf. Nun, ich warte noch, es sei, ich warte noch, nun, es sei, bis man sieht. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Nun wohl an, es bleibt dabei.
Doch brennt es euch wie mich im Herzen. Wir würden auch nach Mieten gehen. Wir würden auch nach Mieten gehen.
So lasst deine Küche kriegen. Ich werde dein Bein zu mir bringen.
Ich darf vergasse Zauberdinge. Ich darf vergasse Zauberdinge. Erschwinge Glocken, Spieler, Klinge. Ich muss mein liebes Mieten sehen. Ich muss mein liebes Mieten sehen.
Shall we just wind that down there before they start on the Celeste solo?
That will be excellent.
So that's just tell us what that was again.
Well, that was part of my favourite opera, Die Silberflut, or the Magic Flute. And you can probably hear Papageno's whistle to the birds and the flute sounds, of course. And Mozart specially made the role bigger because his friend, the bass singer, only got superfluous roles, and of course the bigger the role, presumably more money you got. And I do think basses are very much underrated.
No, I can just imagine them sitting around having a couple of steins on a Friday night and him saying, "Oh, Wolfgang, I never get any good roles, you know. Why don't you write something for me?" And he goes, "Oh, okay, then."
Yeah, and he does. And I think that's a lovely story in itself.
It is indeed. So that's the Magic Flute, and you're looking forward to seeing
another Mozart, the Barber of Seville. Mm. The Seattle Opera Company is something else. Oh, I was just blown away. I went to the Rosen Cavalier on the final night when I was there last time, and everybody's dressed up to the dimes. Mm. Oh, it's just a magical atmosphere. And I was absolutely amazed. The roles were played by absolute stars of Europe and so on, and they just love coming over to Seattle because they get treated with such golden handshakes. And even the bit roles are stars from England and Europe, and it's just an absolute sensory delight to the opera in Seattle. So I imagine the ballet will be similarly well endowed because, as you know, Seattle is a city where there are people with a lot of money. And although a lot of them do a lot of good in other countries, there's several of them who fund other parts of the arts in Seattle very well indeed.
Wealthy philanthropists. That's what we need at Waiheke Radio, actually, and also, I guess, some...
Yes, so if anybody wants to help out, Waiheke Radio would love to hear from them.
Heck yeah. Now, just to recap for everybody, Rosalie, shortly you're retiring from the library. Is it your last day on Friday?
Last day on Friday, so it's going to be great.
How long have you been at the Waiheke Library?
Well, I started in 1993.
Ooh, way back last century.
Yes, so as I say, you know, sort of I've been 15 years as a permanent one.
Crikey.
I never thought it would last this long. But the whole thing is I enjoy people and I enjoy books. So it's pity I didn't get down to it earlier. But then, as I say, I was sort of all my life have been words and talking and books.
Well, there you go, a wide and varied career. And would you have said at 21 or whatever, so we'll just ditch that phone call for the time being because it's a bit noisy there.
It is.
But yeah, we'll get onto the phone call in a minute. What we're doing is, where was I? It's broken my train of thought.
Yeah,
you say
I was
something.
Just thinking it might be a phone call from the wealthy philanthropist going to give Waiheke Radio millions.
Phone. Yes, it could be.
Yes, yes.
But you say something while I just talk to this person.
Yes, of course. Well, I just want to say a big thank you to everyone for being so wonderful to me, because Waiheke, you have been wonderful to me. I have so enjoyed living here. I've enjoyed and loved the library, and it's really great. So thank you to Matthew for being so nice to me for my interview on radio, and thank you to you for listening, and thank you for coming to the library, and do keep coming to the library. There's very good staff there, and our manager Fiona Kralichek is just great, and Di customer services is terrific. The whole staff is just wonderful. Rhiannon is so knowledgeable about books, And of course, she's well known on the island too. Her husband Andy is a great mandolin player.
Do you think they're going to get along without you pretty well?
Oh, I'm sure they will. Yes, I hate to admit it. They won't even notice I'm gone.
Oh, we'll notice, but it'll still be the library. That's good.
And it's a great library.
Thanks a lot to Rosalie. And all the best for your retirement. And I'm sure we're going to be hearing great things for you. Enjoy your trip to Seattle.
Thank you.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues. Brought to you by Island. Art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Yeah, morning, man.
And you're come in to tell us about what's going on today.
Yes, well, today, in fact, this week, there's quite a few things going on today. The first thing, let me say, there's a confluence of a number of international events, and we're celebrating or marking today on the island. First one is White Ribbon. White Ribbon Day is normally November the 25th, which is later in a week, about Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, but we're going to be celebrating it in just about half an hour's time, the opening of White Ribbon Day at the Alison Park flagpole.
Right.
And it's White Ribbon Day, if I give a little bit of history on that.
Yeah, why not?
So the a quick bit of research on the net tells me that in 1991 there was a brutal shooting of 14 women students at the University of Montreal. And that was marked afterwards by men wearing white ribbons to show that they didn't approve of any violence towards women. And this has been adopted by the United Nations when they have a International Day for the Eradication of Violence Towards Women internationally. And that's marked on November the 25th, and the wearing of white ribbons is picked up as the mark of that day. And that's what we'll be doing at Alison Park today. So it's basically a commemoration, or a remembrance, I should say, rather than commemoration, a remembrance of the women who have died in New Zealand from domestic violence. You'll be shocked at the numbers. Families Commission quotes around about 14 per year.
Right.
So just as a mark of that day, a mark of remembrance for the sadness of those women that have suffered this affliction of our society, there'll be a commemoration at the flagpole at 11 o'clock.
Right, and that's 14 people in a small country like ours dying at the hands of somebody they knew and trusted, yeah. Basically.
That's horrific. 14 is the tip of the spiky tip of the iceberg, because we gather that the figures for the police arrest and convictions, this is not just the arrest, but the convictions over the country, 3,500 men per year.
Crikey.
They say a third of the women, in New Zealand sometime over their lifetime will have experienced violence at the hands of the person that they're most close to.
So that's a bit of a solemn event in terms of just commemorating, remembering and honouring the victims there of domestic violence. On the other hand, a bit more of a celebration this afternoon.
Yes. Well, the other thing that's also happening around the same time is International Men's Day. This is a theme that's picked up by UNESCO, and it's really it's related to men's health. As you know, in New Zealand, that there's areas of that men suffer health woes that women don't. Prostate cancer is an obvious example.
Yep.
And a lot of men very resistant to going to the doctor for the traditional physical test.
Right. And a bit of controversy in the last week about whether this prostate-specific antigen thing, because I turned 40 a few years ago and the doctor says, oh, we're going to get your blood test, and don't worry if it's a false positive, because sometimes they do, but have it checked out anyway.
Yeah, and they say false positives, and then they say sometimes it's not even picked up.
Yep.
So there's an area there that needs research and it needs focus, and certainly the technology that is available for men to at least get checked, to put themselves somewhere on the spectrum to know whether they shouldn't inquire further,
yep,
is something we need to advertise to men. That's on the prostate cancer front.
And it's about raising awareness, and it's also about support.
Yeah, it's about support, and it's about men's health,
yep,
and it's about, from our point with Living Without Violence, we're also concerned with men's health, the health of their relationships, the health of the families that they're living in, and in particular the growing health of the children of those families which often fall between the cracks. We can say a bit more about that later, I'm sure.
Well, that's an interesting point, really, is because the mental health aspect of it, I mean, what you're dealing with living without violence, I guess, is people going through relationship breakups quite often, very stressful time, and it's good to see that there are some support networks in place, and I guess it's building those support networks, because it's quite hard for a guy who's going through a difficult relationship time to actually call for help or know where to go for help.
Yeah, very often the help that comes to us is after the police have been involved and they've gone through a court hearing, or at least been in front of a JP or a magistrate, and they've been mandated to come. And we have small numbers of men, but invariably the men who come along find the support of the other men in the group once they relax and start to talk about topics in their lives which often they don't talk to friends or workmates about, or certainly probably not their partners about. They find that just simply talking about it in the company of men who are listening and who are sharing similar stories,
yep,
is very therapeutic just in itself.
Yep.
We'd love to have a lot of men rolling along who are not mandated. Once they're mandated and they stay for once they've stayed there with us for a month and a half,
yep,
and they start to settle in and quite enjoy their Thursday nights. But getting men who voluntarily come along, then often the other busyness of life simply takes priority and they don't stay for the full time, which is a pity.
Yep, but on the other hand, I see the there's been a poster up outside the Red Cross for a few weeks or maybe a few months saying, you know, when a relationship is healthy, the whole family benefits from that. And I guess it's also a matter of recognising the stresses and strains of life, living in a relationship, realising it's not always going to be smooth all the time, giving support through those times.
Oh, every relationship that we're living in closely with other people is going to be stresses and strains.
Yep.
It has to be. I mean,
you want to come along to some of our DJ meetings sometimes, I'll tell you, it's all in wrestling there.
It's a relationship in itself, it's all domestic, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we've every relationship's got to have those tensions, and it's really what we do about them, how we handle them.
Yep.
And our society has changed rapidly with over the whole issues of the 60s, the drug culture, the women's liberation, the sexual emancipation, the what can you say? Women prime ministers, women governor generals, women.
And yet, a lot of us grew up in households where violence was the rule, not necessarily in a chaotic, strange way, but just an ordinary middle class background. It was, you know, wait till your father gets home, you'll get a hiding.
Yeah, dad was the boss, and nowadays it's an equality thing. It's women have got every bit as much right. Our daughters, we want them to go forward into life with absolutely as many rights as our sons.
I guess the point I'm making is a lot of adults today have grown up in a house where the only the only strategy given to them was, well, get on with it or you get a clip around the ear.
That's right.
And you know, our fathers and grandfathers weren't cruel people, they were just responding to the mores of the day. Now things have changed a bit, and it's been quite, you know, widely publicised. People, well, there's no alternative to what people have grown up with, so I guess it's making a new way of acting.
That's right, and that's we repeat the patterns of our homes with our children. But I think there's a point here with the change to society is that some of those residual behaviours when men get stuck as to how to behave when perhaps their partner or wife wants to live a life rather differently to the way that he might have planned.
Yep.
Then we get stuck for a rational, thought-out approach, and we fall back to the patterns that we saw our dad did, which is a clip.
Yep.
And that sets a rather nasty sort of snowball rolling down the hill, which grows and grows.
Yep.
And part of our job with living without violence is to give people some insight into other ways and other ways of thinking, other ways of approaching these topics. And those people who were brought up with ways that are effective and appropriate for today's world are certainly blessed.
Yep.
But many of us have had to work hard to overcome the learnings we had in our childhood.
And it's never too late to mend, that's the thing. I mean, people sometimes say, oh, crikey, it's gone too far, I can't go back. On the end, you know, all you got to do is stop.
No, I expect to be mending in time, at least 95, and still mending.
Yep.
Yeah, it won't stop, it doesn't stop.
Now, getting on to this afternoon's do, there's an international car rally now, and bike rally. Now, I heard Simon and Al talking about that, and I have to explain. The international side of it is I'm going to be turning up on my Japanese motorbike, which is, of course, a different nation, and I believe there's somebody turning up on an Italian scooter, and there'll be all kinds of makes and models of vehicles there, and all sorts of makes and models of men riding them along. I'm going to try and decorate them up a bit. That's at 2:30 down at Matiatia, getting along to the wool shed. What's happening down at the wool shed? Do you know about that?
Well, in the wool shed, there's going to be a number of local bands playing, and we'll be kicking off there at 4 o'clock, going right through to 9. It's a free show. We're welcoming the...
It's actually a pretty impressive lineup. I see there's Radio Rebelda, who have been a big draw card on the island, Mr. Last Boat, who were big on the Blues Festival, and DJ RG Barge is good fun. And I don't know if the face painting's going to run a bit in the misty, moisty weather, don't you think?
Well, I think it'll be worth it. It'll be fun. It'll be worth watching.
Other DJs, Katie Soljak, Ian Simpson, and all sorts of people. And the... Live Waiheke musicians and DJs. It's going right on to the evening.
Yeah, we're inviting families, children, everybody to be there. Yes, it's a Men's International Day, and it's for men to bring their families.
Right.
Bring themselves and bring their families.
Oh, sounds good. Mm. So great music and great family entertainment down the Woolshed. That's at the Dirt Track Club, and that's part of celebrating International Men's Day. Anything else you need to bring to our attention there, Bill?
Just that we want people there. That's the main thing. Yeah, come along. It's free.
It's a free event.
Yeah. And I haven't seen it on the posters, and I'm just a little bit embarrassed being not being tied into the organisation of this, but certainly last year they had the bar open. There was soft drinks for the kids available. There was food. They had the food there. So everything that normally goes on in a wool shed for a social event is available there.
And it's a great family-friendly venue as well. It's great. I must say, they've got, you know.
And look, I tell you, for those people that haven't been there, they flash past it on the way to Rocky Bay and haven't been inside, it is worth seeing what those the Dirt Track Club have done to that venue. It is the sort of club venue of the island, really. It's great.
Yeah, no, I heard somebody say it's got to be one of the best venues, actually. So that's really good. Down at the Woolshed this afternoon, starting about 4 o'clock, the car and motorbike rally at 2:30 down at Matiatia, down at the car park. And, thanks a lot to Bill from Living Without Violence. Have a great day, and keep up the good work. Oh, just one thing, is there anything actually happening on the 25th, White Ribbon Day itself? I believe Carmelish is organising something.
Yeah. Carmelish from Living Without Violence is organising it, but the main event for the opening of the White Ribbon Day is today.
Right.
And we would hope that people would wear their ribbons right through the week.
And that's, did you say 11:30?
11 o'clock at the flagpole at Ellison Park.
11 o'clock at the flagpole at Ellison Park. Mm. Okay, we'll go along and pay tribute and then enjoy the great events of the afternoon. Thanks a lot, Bill, from Living Without Violence.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirua.